welcome into episode 5 of Bear Ball. I'm your host, Brennan Barbu, and welcome in, guys. It is time for the 2025 NBA Finals. It's going to be between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Indiana Pacers. So, if you guys remember back to episode 1, I told you the Oklahoma City Thunder were going to represent the Western Conference in the NBA Finals. So, how did they get there? They got there by dominating at home, being a great defensive team, and trusting in SGA to go get the job done. So, I told you guys that they were going to get there because they were going to get matchups that were favorable for them. And, like I predicted, that pretty much went the way I thought it would. Memphis, that was a very easy series for them. Denver, that one was definitely tougher for them. It went all the way to 7, but they dominated in Game 7. And then we had that Minnesota series, which they really just made look easy. I mean, they dropped a game, but let's be honest, I don't think that that was them at their best. All teams, when they're dominating, sometimes they lose some focus and drop a game, and I think that's exactly what happened. So, the Indiana Pacers, however, I chose them to lose in the first round. I believe I then also chose them to lose in the second round. So, clearly, on this show, I have not been giving the Indiana Pacers enough credit for the great team that they've built. They were in the conference finals last year, and Halliburton goes down, and that's how they lose that series. Halliburton still has not lost a playoff series in Indiana. So we'll see if that's all about to change or if he can continue this magical run he's been having. The Indiana Pacers, it's not just Halliburton, though. They've got Siakam. He's shown that he can be great in a deep playoff run. He averaged, I believe it was 20 points and 5 assists and 7 rebounds in his first NBA Finals. So that's definitely a very good performance from... He was number 2 or maybe even 3 option, depending on how you look at it, on that Raptors team. And now here is number 2 option. He goes out and wins Eastern Conference Finals MVP. Halliburton thought he was going to get it, but I thought it rightfully went to Siakam. He went out there, put up 25.5 a game, and he was just great for him. Halliburton, of course, was better in the fourth quarters, and he had the more clutch moments. But overall, it was not the greatest series from Halliburton. He was by no means bad, and he had his moments, but there were games in there where he was putting up 18, 17 points. So I thought that it correctly went to Siakam. Now, the question is, can this Indiana Pacers team put up a challenge against the OKC Thunder? If you have not seen, OKC is one of the biggest favorites in NBA Finals sports betting history. I believe they're at plus 700. And my apologies, I just checked. On DraftKings Sportsbook, at least, it is minus 650 for OKC to win the finals. That, I believe, puts them at the number 6 or 7 spot for biggest favorites of all time. And they currently sit at 9.5-point favorites to win the game 1. That game is at home, and if you've been watching OKC at home in these playoffs, then you know that sounds just about right. Honestly, it sounds kind of enticing to bet on OKC. They're 9 games at home in the playoffs. They've won 8 of those games. In those games, they won by 51, 19, 43, 7, 32, 26, 15, and 30, making them plus 221 at home in those games. The one game they lost was by 1, a buzzer-beating Aaron Gordon dunk at the very buzzer by 0.1 seconds left on the clock when he put that ball through. So for them to play that well at home during these playoffs is just incredible. For one playoff run, that actually puts them number 1 in point differential in NBA history. So they are one of the most dominant home playoff teams we've ever seen, at least in the Western Conference. Now, Indiana has been amazing in games 1 and 2, whether that's at home or on the road. They've won game 1 and 2 in all 3 series they've played. So it's definitely possible. Now, my pick, I'll just go ahead and give it to you right now. It's the OKC Thunder. I told you the OKC Thunder would be here. I thought that they would lose to the Celtics, but because the Celtics aren't here, OKC is going to win the championship. I'm sure most of you are picking that as well, so it's probably nothing special or that exciting to hear, but that's just what's going to happen. The Pacers, though, let's talk about how the Pacers can pull off an upset here. They are, first off, they're going to have to steal game 1 or 2. It has to happen. Without one of those first 2 games, I don't see how you don't end up being down 3-1 come game 5. And if that is the situation, kiss it goodbye. You're not going to win the series. So games 1 and 2, you have to pull out one of them. Now, I think that they are obviously looking to pull out game one so that they don't have the pressure of needing to pull off a must-win game two. Now, game one is going to be a lot of fun. I think that 9.5-point spread is actually a little bit big. I know OKC has been crushing folks at home, but I think the Pacers are going to keep it close. I think we're going to get one that goes down to the wire, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I personally think that this series will be over in 5 or 6. I would be shocked if it goes 7 games. Unfortunately, this OKC Thunder team is just a far, far better team, in my opinion, than Indiana. Now, Indiana is a good team, okay? They got all the way to the finals. They were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. It's no fluke, okay? Tyrese Halliburton, definitely a one of, if not the best point guards in the entire East. Also one of the best point guards, honestly, in the entire NBA at this point. You've also got Pascal Siakam. You've got great weapons around him like Miles Turner, Nesmith, Nembhard, and a very, very good bench that they'll go use 4 or 5 people from in any given playoff game. So it is a very competitive, very good team. They like to get out and they like to run. They like to hit threes. And they honestly, they don't play physical defense on the level of OKC. At least that's not how it seems to me. But their defense definitely is not lackluster either. When you look at defensive ratings, they're a team that likes to try to get a lot of stocks. They get steals, they get blocks, they want to run. Lockdown-wise, they're definitely not the best at that. They're kind of rated lower out of the 16 playoff teams in defensive rating, but this team is definitely not lackluster on the defensive end either. OKC, however, they are a phenomenal defense, and they are also a great offense. Indiana might just be the best offense in the league this year, but OKC is the best defense, and they are a top 5 offense. So put those two things combined against this inexperienced Pacers team. I know a lot of people keep talking about how OKC is inexperienced as well, but when you look at it, the Pacers don't have more experience than the OKC Thunder do. I mean, Siakam has been to a championship, but he wasn't the leader of that team or anything, and he's not a good enough player, in my opinion, that he's going to raise the Pacers above the OKC Thunder. I think the OKC Thunder have just been the best team in this league from start to finish, and they're going to go finish it off, man. Moving on, though, we're going to talk about how the Knicks have just fired coach Tom Thibodeau. Now, Tom Thibodeau has been very good for the Knicks over the past 5-6 seasons. He has brought them to the playoffs each of the last 3 years. He got to the Eastern Conference Finals this year. He's got 50 win seasons each of the last 2 years. And if you have been following the NBA or the Knicks for a while, you know that is some pretty decent success for the Knicks. The Knicks, even being in a humongous market, have not been a great franchise for a long time. So getting rid of one of the coaches who has been the most successful for your franchise over the past, 20 years, it definitely is a big risk. Is it a smart move? I understand where it's coming from. They don't think that Tom Thibodeau necessarily raises his players enough to where they are going to win a championship. Now, I personally don't fully agree with this. I think that the Knicks were not looking like a conference finalist all season. I think that when you look at the record against great teams, when you look at the competition with the Celtics and the Cavs, I don't think a lot of people thought they were going to be in the conference finals. So them getting to the conference finals is a nice accomplishment. I know people always give him shit for how he doesn't play the bench enough and how his offense is not complex enough. And those are valid points. He does need to dip into his bench more, especially in the regular season. Don't get your guys all tired, worn out, injured before the playoffs even begin. And on top of that, you also want to test out different lineups and see what works and what doesn't work. So you're not testing that out mid-playoff game. On top of that, the offense was very Brunson-centric. Everyone who watched the Knicks in the playoffs knew that. It basically felt like Brunson iso ball. People will stand around and see if any help defenders come, and he'll swing it to them. When Brunson was out, it basically became cat ball. What can Karl Anthony Towns do? Can he hit some nice deep threes for us? And outside of that, the offense really just looks sloppy and ugly. But Tom Thibodeau, his calling card is defense. And a lot of people have been criticizing the Knicks, saying that their defense has not looked like a Tom Thibodeau defense, not one of those top defenses in the league. But my argument is that when you have Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns both playing 35-plus minutes a game, I'm not so sure how you're going to go and put an elite defense on the floor. So the defense that we saw the next play could be the best defense that that team is able to play. Now, there's a couple ways that you could maybe change this. First off, obviously with a new coach, Brunson and Cat won't have to play that many minutes. And, you know, maybe we'll be able to get some bench players whose sole purpose is to go out there and defend. That would definitely help the Knicks a lot. I also think that I honestly personally want to see them move Mitchell Robinson to center and Karl-Anthony Towns to power forward. I thought Karl-Anthony Towns in Minnesota as a power forward alongside Rudy Gobert was just fine. I don't think it changes his style of play much. And if you give him smaller defenders, then he will be able to attack those mismatches even more. And that will also give you a real rim defender in Mitchell Robinson. Then if you don't have to trade anyone, you could keep Josh Hart or even OG Anunoby on the bench, have them sub in, get heavy minutes that way, and then you have a nice deeper rotation. Mitchell Robinson, obviously, to get in the starting lineup, will need to work on his free throws. Being able to just go to the Hacker strategy with 3-4 minutes left every single quarter makes him so unreliable, especially late in games, and that is something he's going to have to work on. I mean, we always wanted Andre Drummond to work on it here in Detroit, and he said he was, and I never really saw much improvement. So we'll see if Mitchell Robinson can make any strides in that aspect. But I don't know if it's a good decision, honestly. It's a decision that I can understand from a perspective, but overall, I don't think that it's the decision I would have made. Let's see if the Knicks, if this actually ends up helping them, or if they just, curse themselves again, as they always do. So, and really quick, there's one quick question that I wanted to bring up and discuss. If any of you have any opinions on this, leave it in the comments below. I saw a couple of people talking about how if Pascal Siakam is able to win this championship with the Pacers, then he would become a Hall of Famer. Now, it's kind of crazy to think about, because when you think Hall of Fame, you think best players ever. But then when you really look at the list, there's some players on there with accolades that just weren't that great. Tracy McGrady, Reggie Miller. These players, when you look at their accolades, do not deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. But they end up being in the Hall of Fame because it's the Basketball Hall of Fame, not the NBA Hall of Fame. So the criteria is definitely different. If Pascal Siakam can somehow go out there and help his team win another championship, I would say he ends up in the Hall of Fame. He would be a most improved player, a 3-time All-Star, and a 2-time NBA champion. I could give you a long, long list of Hall of Famers who do not have that resume. First off, there's a lot of legends who never accomplished 2 championships, such as Charles Barkley, John Stockton, Karl Malone, and many, many others. And there's a lot of Hall of Famers who never even made 3 All-Star teams, such as a great player like Ben Wallace, even a couple others, like some of the older players, and obviously any international or WNBA players they have included in the list. I just think that they need to separate the NBA's Hall of Fame into its own thing, so that they don't have all of this criteria problems with who should be in and who shouldn't be in. That personally is just my own opinion on that one, but I think with the current criteria, if the Pacers go on to win, I think you have to throw Pascal Siakam in the Hall of Fame, honestly. So, kind of crazy to think about. Let me know what you guys think down below. And one more topic I wanted to talk about with the NBA is parity. A lot of people love it, a lot of people hate it, and I just want to talk about it. So, I remember when the Cavs and the Warriors were going to the finals every single year over and over, everyone was talking about how much they hated it, how they already knew it was going to happen, and there was no point to watch. And nowadays, we have not been able to have teams get back to the finals 2 years in a row in 7 years. We've just been seeing new teams playing over and over again. And in this instance, either OKC or Indiana are going to win their first championship ever. And I mean, that's, of course, there's nothing wrong with that. That is fun. That's exciting to watch. But at the same time, it's not as special when I feel like I've already seen it. The Nuggets hadn't won a championship, I don't know if it was ever, but it hadn't been in a super long time. I think it might have been ever. The Bucks hadn't won a championship since Kareem. We're just seeing this more and more often. So it's not as special, honestly, when it's not as uncommon. Now, honestly, I don't think that this is something that's going to change anytime soon in the NBA. And a big reason for that is because of the CBA that was signed. If you look at it, it is very, very difficult for teams to sign three max contracts. If they're doing that, they're not only going to be screwing themselves in terms of building the rest of the roster, but owners are going to have to pay more. And you know owners don't want to pay more. A lot of these owners in the NBA, it's not their only source of revenue. So why would they spend all this extra tax just for this? It's just not as common as you might think it is. Even when a team is super successful, they might not sign all their dudes back. Let's talk about the Thunder. The Thunder have three very, very talented players. SGA, obviously, he's on contract for another couple years. And I believe Chet and Jalen are both on contract for a year or two as well. But the problem is, you are not going to be able to pay all three of these guys a supermax contract. I know for a fact OKC is not going to dip into the luxury tax now when they wouldn't when they had three players of higher caliber. Now, I know James Harden at that time, people didn't know what he was going to turn into. But when you had a team that young get to an NBA championship and compete, you'd assume that they would do everything in their power to keep that core together, and they didn't. So I don't see them paying a whole bunch of extra money, whether that's Presti or that is ownership. Either way, they're probably going to have to lose Jalen Green or Chet Holmgren. Now, which will they choose? Obviously, we can't tell at this moment, but it's just a little bit unfair in terms of building a dynasty, because if you draft well, you still are not going to be able to keep all your guys. And, you know, it's going to be very difficult too, and I don't know how often we're going to see it. And it honestly feels a little bit unfair. Let's go back and think about teams that under the last CBA might not have been able to stay together, like the Golden State Warriors, the Cleveland Cavaliers with Kyrie, Kevin Love, and LeBron, and countless others. I mean, the Nets, obviously that didn't work, but it was still a fun experiment we all wanted to see happen with Harden, Kyrie, and Kevin Durant. You know, like these things, they're just not going to be as common anymore. And it's going to make a dynasty much, much harder in today's NBA. So if this is the style of basketball you like, seeing different teams win every year, you know, that's good. I mean, that's good for you then. But personally, I honestly do think a lot of NBA fans do like storylines, do like there to be drama involved in the game, because it just gives you more to watch. Having LeBron be in 10 straight NBA finals, it made a big villain to root against or to root for if you were a fan of his. And it just made the game more fun to watch. So, unfortunately, right now, that's not how the NBA has been for years. There's not really a team to root for that you can be confident are going to be there year after year. You think OKC now, hey, maybe OKC will be there year after year. But we thought that with the Nuggets, and the Nuggets did not end up being like that. We thought that with the Bucks, and that didn't happen. So, you know, we'll never know. Maybe OKC will be right back here next year and the year after, and we'll see if they can even sign their guys to some deals. But personally, I don't think that's what's going to happen. And, you know, for better or worse, depending on what kind of NBA fan you are, that's the league that I think we're going to be looking at for a long time here, at least for the next half decade or so. At least that's what I think. If you guys think I'm crazy, let me know down below. But it's time to move on to the NFL, man. The schedules have finally released, and if you are a Detroit fan like me, you've seen the schedule. It is definitely rough this year. The first thing that stands out to me is just how many tough road games we have. Just to read through a few, obviously we have the three against the team in our division, the Packers, Bears, and the Vikings. But on top of that, week three, we have the Ravens. Week five, the Bengals. Six, the Chiefs. Then a few weeks later, we have the Commanders, who obviously we lost to in the first round of the playoffs for us, which was the divisional round. But then we have the Eagles the week after, also on the road on Sunday night. Then we have to take on the Rams on the road with Matthew Stafford. And then the last two games of the season are the Vikings and Bears in the division, which will obviously, at that point in the season, be huge games for us. So it's definitely going to be a tough road for the Lions. Also, if you've been following the news, our center, Frank Ragnow, unfortunately has retired after seven seasons in the NFL. He had a great run. He was a huge contributor to this new changing team we've had. Pro Bowler last year. And, you know, his efforts in the middle are definitely going to be missed. We just drafted Tate Ratledge in the second round. We also could move over Glasgow from guard over to center. He did that some last year. Personally, I think that Glasgow will probably start the season there, and we'll move Tate Ratledge. Maybe we'll start him in at guard and move him into center. I just think that guard is a bit easier in the NFL to play than center is. But, you know, we'll definitely see how Dan Campbell wants to play that decision. But Dan Campbell had a press conference where basically he said, this is what we're used to. We're used to being doubted. It's Detroit versus everybody, and we're going to go out there and do what we do. And that's exactly the kind of mentality you got to have. I think that Detroit, I know that we lost our offense and defensive coordinators, and everyone's going to make a big deal about it. But Dan Campbell is a great coach either way. He's going to find the right people to put in that are going to run the system that he wants to run. And I'm sure that we're still going to be competing for an NFC title this year. Obviously, the Bears should be taking a step up, you'd at least assume, with Ben Johnson leading there instead of Eberflus, who was just terrible and definitely deserved to be fired. It's definitely going to be fun to watch the NFC North this season. The Packers, you assume that they're still going to be very good with Jordan Love. And the Vikings, obviously, they have O'Connell, who is a phenomenal coach. He alone is going to keep them in it. But J.J. McCarthy, you know, we're going to see what he is. I don't think that he's, like, the most talented quarterback in the world, but I definitely think that he's capable of running a system similar to Kirk Cousins or Sam Darnold did. So the Vikings definitely could see some success this year as well when a lot of people, again, aren't expecting them to. So the NFC North is one of, if not the toughest division in all of football once again. And I think the Lions, I think you can expect them to go somewhere right around 11 and 6 or 12 and 5, somewhere right around that range, and competing for the NFC North title. We're definitely going to make the playoffs this year. I have no doubt about that. Our offense, I mean, we still have just so many great offensive skill players. And defensively, I definitely think that we are going to take a step up. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson, with him back, he alone is going to improve our defense. Without him, we just got worse and worse every single week. Not to mention, we had injuries all over the place. Obviously, Aaron Glenn was very, very vital to that defense. He, even with all those injuries, was finding ways to help us be competitive or get turnovers. Every single game, it felt like. And obviously, after two straight postseasons with just heartbreaking losses, you know, being a Detroit fan, we're used to that, but people think that now after that, we're just going to crumble. I just don't think that's what's going to happen. I mean, Jared Goff, Dan Campbell are definitely not just going to lay down and die. So more things I noticed with the schedule, we have a lot of primetime and 425 games. So, I mean, always love to see that. Lions finally getting appreciated by the league. I remember a few years ago when we were still terrible, the NFL gave us zero primetime games, and their excuse was that we always get a Thanksgiving game, so that basically counts. And it's like, that game was played at noon, so it was definitely not a normal primetime game. So finally, the Lions are getting the respect we deserve, and we're getting all these primetime games, 4:30 starts, going to be commentated by Romo and the boys, so it's definitely going to be fun. Another thing I want to mention is I don't understand why the NFL would have the start of the season be Cowboys versus the Eagles. That's just going to be no fun. We all know the Eagles are going to absolutely smash them. And let's be honest, Detroit versus the Eagles would have been a way better start to the season. I know that Detroit, we started the season two years ago against the Chiefs, and it was a very fun game, and everyone loved it. You know why? Because people love watching the Detroit Lions. So they should have got the Detroit Lions on that first game of the season. That was definitely a mistake by the NFL. And I just can't wait for the NFL offseason, man. After these NBA finals, I'm going to be talking a lot about teams over-unders, and I'm going to be breaking down what I think every team is going to go, like, through their entire schedule. And there's just going to be a lot of fun topics to talk about there. Also, in NFL news, the Tush Push was officially not banned. I think that was a good decision by all the teams. I don't think that there was really any good reason to ban it. It is a football play. I mean, they wanted to ban it because the Eagles basically are too good at it, and I don't think that's necessarily fair. I'm not an Eagles fan. I don't necessarily love watching the play, but because the Eagles are the only team that are actually good at doing it, you kind of just got to let it go, man. And another little tangent I wanted to go on was the NFL refs are still not full-time, and I talk about this all the time with people I know. I cannot stand this by the NFL. I will never understand why they are not full time now, especially with sports betting being legal in so many states. Obviously, with more people putting real money on the games, when all these calls go wrong, there's going to be so many freaking fans online talking about how all the games are rigged and how there's conspiracies and the script is in. And obviously, watching it, it can honestly feel like that because you have so much invested in it. And it happens all the time where the refs just get calls wrong and you wonder how they get paid to even do this. And then when you really look into it, they're not getting paid very much to do it. This is a league that is a multi-billion dollar league. They get billions of dollars in profit every single season. And they can't have their NFL refs go do training all offseason, pay them throughout the year, pay them a normal salary, so that these aren't just volunteers who come every single year. Obviously not just volunteers, they get paid, and they get paid well for every game they do. But if you were paying them in the offseason as well to go get better, watch film, and do all these things, then we would have a better product. Also, with technology getting the way it is, I'm so tired of the argument that it's going to slow down the game, because I don't believe that for a second. With how fast people are with technology now, people can watch it and get you the result so quickly. I don't understand why we have to go over it 600 million times and discuss it so hard. It's very clear on the footage. Just have someone reviewing all plays at all times, and if there is something that is clearly missed, why can't it just get called? I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm just ranting about missed calls because it's just a frustrating part of football, but it's always going to happen, man, and I don't think the NFL is going to do anything to change it, at least until there's enough public outcry to where they feel like they have to. But it's just incredibly frustrating that this many years into operation, you don't have full-time referees. It makes no sense. The NBA does it. The NHL, I'm almost positive, does it. And even the MLB does it. So why is the NFL the only American professional sports league where they don't want to pay their refs full-time to be good at their job? I really just will never understand that entire situation from the NFL. It really does not make much sense at all. Also, very quickly, the Detroit Tigers sit atop the entire MLB. They are 40-22 as I am recording this video, and they are just continuing that success they had at the end of last season going into those playoffs. Scooball is an absolute freak. This young team is on fire right now, and hopefully we can just keep it up, man. It's a very, very long season, 62 games. We're not even a third of the way into the season, I don't believe. Actually, I think we are over a third of the way into the season, almost halfway into the season. So, you know, still have a lot of baseball left to play. So the Detroit Tigers, hopefully they can keep up that momentum, keep up that great pitching, and keep the runs, keep those runs coming, man. So I hope you guys have had a great time listening. Don't forget on YouTube to hit that like button. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on those notifications. Don't forget, you can find this podcast on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many others. So don't forget, guys, you only live once. Don't waste any time on negativity. Hope you guys have a great week. Peace.